Former swimmers looking for a way to give back to the sport in New York City? Reach out to Imagine Swimming. Since 2002, they've been the premier learn-to-swim school with international and American staff, including Olympic champions Anthony Irvin and Eric Vent. Imagine Swimming offers infant to adult classes, plus competitive team options, water polo, and an artistic swimming club coached by an Olympic silver medalist. With flagship locations across Manhattan and Brooklyn, Imagine is always looking for the next generation of swimmers to pass on their knowledge and passion for swimming.
Hey guys, I've been trialing some revolutionary new swim tech, and now you can get your hands on it too. This is EO Swim Better, a swimming evolution in the palm of your hands. Improve your technique with EO Swim Better.
Analyze your stroke technique with EO's Swim Better handset. Go to eolab.com. Use code Brett at checkout and save 10%.
All right, here we are. Nick Butler, how you doing, mate?
Very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. It's been a crazy few days for me in swimming, so I imagine it's been a crazy few days for you in swimming. Look, I want to start by just saying this. Is like, let's just assume here that nobody knows who you are. Nobody knows the backstory. And nobody knows kind of how we got here, and nobody really knows what even happened the last few days. It's been very confusing. There's been a lot of information being put out. I figured I'd just go straight to the source. You're the man in the middle of this in a way, so, or one of the men in the middle of this. So just start there, Nick. Just tell us who you are and how you got involved in this.
Okay, well, I'm a English journalist, you can tell by my accent, but I work in Berlin in Germany for the ARD doping editorial team. And we're basically a small team that started by just investigating stories about doping. It sort of snowballed to other sports stories like corruption and abuse and other things as well. But the head of our team, Hayo Seppel, did a lot of the stories about Russian doping a few years ago. So that's sort of how it all started. And we mainly look at Olympic sports, but a lot of different topics. And this is a story that we've been aware of loosely for a long time, 2 years, in fact. And we've had little pieces of information via various sources. And right from the start, I mean, to us, it was obviously allegations about doping in Chinese swimming, but also it seemed that the institutions of sport had not for the first time not done their job of investigating and overseeing doping to the best of their ability. So that was always the story we were looking at. And yeah, eventually we got access to a report by the Chinese anti-doping agency and basically proof that 23 swimmers, all from the Chinese national team, had submitted a number of positive doping tests at a competition in China at the beginning of 2021. And after months of not much happening and sort of investigations behind closed doors, this report was published in June, which basically found that the athletes had, it argued that the athletes had tested positive because of contamination in the kitchen of their hotel. They tested positive for trimetazidine, which is a substance that is not usually found in contamination cases.
But it's not usually found in kitchens, I'd imagine, either.
No, not in kitchens at all. It's basically a hard pill. The key thing is that it was an investigation by the Chinese Ministry for Public Security, which is an arm with state police powers, secret police powers, and they haven't provided any evidence as to how this substance got into the kitchen. Only that it was supposedly found there in tiny traces in three different locations. On the above the on the ventilation system, in the drainage, and in spice containers, and from there they have this theory, which isn't proven, but it must have got into the food somehow through the kitchen, eaten by the athletes. And yeah, this report was published, and there was no evidence of any appeal or any action taken by either World Aquatics, the swimming governing body, FINA, then or the World Anti-Doping Agency. And yeah, basically that's, they have now confirmed that they accepted this explanation. They claim it was very difficult for them to do further investigation, and they accepted the science of this supposed contamination, and they've taken an interpretation of their laws which allowed them to essentially not appeal the decision, A, to clear the athletes, and B, not to ever make the case public and proceed with any form of anti-doping violation.
Wow, a lot there, and I've got so many questions. I will say I only wrote down one question, and as I was reading through this, what became obvious to me was there's a lot of acronyms being used here. So I want to say a couple, and I want you to give us the explanation of what these mean. So what does ARD mean?
ARD is the German Public Service Broadcaster. So like the BBC in the UK, for example. Okay.
For those that don't know some of these other terms, I'm just going to put them out there just so we can get some clarification. So WADA is what?
WADA is the World Anti-Doping Agency, which is the global regulator for basically overseeing doping cases around the world. It was set up after a number of scandals in the 90s. And they're funded by a combination of the sports world and governments around the world.
Yeah, I found that strange. I just found that out yesterday, I believe. I read an article where they said WADA was being funded by, you know, certain countries and federations. Is that true? Like, they get their funding from the countries that we're testing?
Yeah, it's basically 50-50 between sport and governments, and there's conflicts of interest on both sides.
Mm.
So the International Olympic Committee basically put in the 150%. And there's all this story all comes to the Olympics, of course, the swimmers were free to compete there. So there's always sort of allegations that the International Olympic Committee put pressure on WADA. And then, as you said, on the other side, you've got governments around the world who all put in different amounts. I think the USA puts in more than anyone else, but other countries, including China, put in a lot of money as well. But I think there's not really any alternative way for it to be done, but it obviously gives rise to, conflict of interest questions.
It seems to give rise to that for sure.
It seems to give rise.
So what's TMZ?
TMZ, so trimetazidine, it's a substance. It's basically a heart medication, but it's been banned in sports since 2014 because it basically increases oxygen and provides more energy to the body, to describe it simply. And it's been quite famous recently because there was a big case at the Beijing Olympics in 2022 involving a Russian figure skater, Camilla Valieva, who was 15 at the time.
Right.
But the first famous case involving trimetazidine was Sun Yang, of course, in the Chinese swimmer in 2014. So yeah, it's not the first time in Chinese swimming.
Right. Okay. China DA, am I saying that right?
CHINADA is the Chinese Anti-Doping Agency. They were in charge of this case.
Okay.
They did the report and sent that report to the World Anti-Doping Agency, and it was the World Anti-Doping Agency's job to either accept it or appeal against it.
Okay, I have a question in regards to that. First up, I want to come back to it. So I saw another acronym today that was the first time I saw it. What's ITA?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So the ITA is a relatively new organization set up to oversee drug testing. So not the management like WADA, just for testing. And they have a number of sports federations as their clients, including World Aquatics. But it's a little bit complicated because at the time now they're sort of do a lot of overseeing all the drug testing programs for swimming and a lot of other sports, cycling, for example. But at the time this case happened, they had a much more limited role. So they're sort of involved, sort of not involved.
Mm. It just adds to the complication.
Yeah, but there's so many acronyms. It's a whole different language. But anti-doping is even worse.
Yeah, I'm reading through all this. I'm like, it's just all acronyms. I have no idea what anybody's saying.
You get on to AAF,
part of it to confuse me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, it does. And this is the names of the organizations isn't the most complex part. Once we get on to adverse and analytical findings and anti-doping rule violations and all, it's a minefield, basically.
Right. Well, look, FINA, as most people know, is World Aquatics now, so that's fine. The last one is USADA, that's the United States of America, Anti-Doping Association?
Yeah, so each country around the world has its own anti-doping agency. USADA is one of the most powerful, one of the most definitely the most vocal.
Mm.
And they have been very critical for a long time of the World Anti-Doping Agency, ever since the Russian doping scandal. And and they are clearly leading a lot of criticism now of how they acted in this case.
Right. Okay. Let me go back to the question that I had that has come up in my mind. Chinada, is that the way you say it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Chinada, why did they turn themselves in the beginning? You know, obviously that this test comes up, the 23 test positive from an internal testing system. I'm just confused of why they turned themselves in the beginning.
Technically they didn't know about it. The laboratory in China, the Beijing laboratory, reported the tests and sent them the test results. And in theory, they only found out at the same time as say, WADA and FINA did when it was entered into the system. That's officially, at least. That's what happened. I mean, if you change, a lot of people have, we have thought a lot about this. If you took a sort of theory that there was some sort of state doping scandal in China, and why did the cases not disappear? And I wouldn't know the answer to that. It's all hypothetical. But the one theory is that the system has actually improved to the extent that it's quite difficult once a sample reaches a laboratory, it's quite difficult for it to simply disappear.
Gotcha.
And that is an improvement. So, that could be. There's not really an answer, but that's one theory. And it's perhaps the alternative is to admit there's a positive and come up with an explanation and rely on no one challenging that.
What about you? When was the first time this came across your desk, or you got pulled into this, or you heard of this?
We've heard. I don't want to say too much, not to give away any sources or anything we've had, because it's very... It's dangerous for different reasons, but we've heard about it for a long time, for 2 years, and then we've gradually pieced together more information.
Okay. It is dangerous. It seems that way to me from the outside looking in. Has it been dangerous? Have you received death threats? Have you anything like that?
No, we haven't, but we've been very careful in limiting who we talk to and everything about this case. So, the head of our team, Hayo Seppel, who I mentioned at the beginning, he's had a lot of threats from his reporting in Russia.
Mm.
To the extent that he wasn't allowed to travel there for the World Cup, and the German foreign ministry got involved. So you do get threats, but I haven't had any in this story yet.
Mm, okay. Let's go back to kind of the beginnings of it then. How does something like this happen? From reports, from what I understand, the athletes were at a competition and staying at a hotel. I think originally I said today I thought they were at an Olympic training center of some sort, and the kitchen had contaminated there. But from what I've been told now, it was at a hotel. They were at a competition. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was a sort of domestic competition.
Okay.
An invite only competition for the top. I think it was the top 16 swimmers in every event in China. And it was almost like a practice event for during COVID, when they hadn't been competing that much, and they had for finals in the morning to practice for the Olympics and things like that. And it was at an Olympic center in Hebei province, which is north, quite close to Beijing. And all the swimmers, apart from the team from Hebei Province, the host nation team, were all staying at one hotel, which was separate nearby, basically, the Huyang Holiday Hotel, it was called. And they were all, so about 200 people, 200 swimmers plus, sorry, I've got that wrong, 100, there were 201 swimmers in total at the event. So all but 15 were staying at this hotel and eating their meals at this hotel. Okay. And there were also lots of support staff and other people staying there. So there were a lot of people eating at this hotel, and obviously not everyone was drug tested. I think they carried out 60 drug tests in total, and of those, there were 28 positive tests from 23 athletes. So some of them tested positive twice.
Why didn't the others test positive twice?
Well, some of them were not tested twice because they were testing the winners of races. So some people obviously won multiple races, some people didn't. But this is something that's a lot's been made of in the last couple of days, that some had positive and negative tests. There was one athlete who went positive, negative, positive. And the World Anti-Doping Agency made a big thing of this in their statement, but we don't really understand that because basically the concentrations were so low for all that was detected in everyone. And when you have a urine sample, it's always the same volume of urine. So I'm not a scientist, but if you've got a lot more water in your body, for example, the sample is going to be much more dilute. So when we're talking about such low concentrations, it's quite easy for some to be positive, some to be negative, depending on the metabolism of your body at the time, which I spoke to a scientist about this today, and he said it's common, and it could mean they had very small amounts contaminated. It could also mean they'd been on a doping cycle weeks before, and this was the end of the excretion period of the substance. So it doesn't really, in our opinion, prove anything.
Doping cycle, you said that. What would a doping cycle look like on a drug like this? How often do you take it? How long does it stay in your system in order to feel the effects of something like this?
In terms of staying in your system, the answer we've got is at least 2 to 3 weeks. It can stay if you took, so to have a sort of normal therapeutic dose of this substance, you'd have, say, one tablet. And if you took that amount, it would protect it. The scientists we've spoken to have agreed about it could be 2 or 3 weeks. It could be more. There's not really been that much research done, but certainly 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay.
I don't really know about how you'd ideally take this as a doping substance, how often you take it. I just don't know that. There's not enough research done.
But it definitely comes in a pill form only?
Only on the market, yes. We have had some discussions saying that it could come in other forms, but essentially it's only known in a pill form, yes.
Okay. And do we know how quickly something like this would take effect in terms of athletic performance?
I think pretty quickly. But of course, it could also have a long-term effect by allowing you to train harder and, the same way a lot of other substances do. But I'm not an expert on that part of it.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
The other thing about it on the pill form, which we think is interesting, is it's got a very hard casing around it. So basically if this pill got into a kitchen and the whole pill got into food, the concentrations in the urine samples would have been massively higher than they were. So it's impossible that a whole pill got in. So what we don't understand is how, if we take it, that only parts of the substance got in, it's got such a hard casing that we just can't see how it would have broken free. Like, we did these experiments in a laboratory where a scientist sort of rubs his hands aggressively on the substance, then takes samples from his hands, and there was nothing there from just touching the pill. We dropped it from a height, and it's possible that it could have been cut up or crushed in some way. But why would that happen in a hotel kitchen? And if it did, why didn't the investigation find someone who was taking this substance? So, the questions we still have.
A lot of questions we still have. I put out something on Instagram today where I said, who was the head chef, first of all, and why, can we talk to him? He's in charge of this kitchen. How did he let a drug like this get into a situation where you've got the top Olympic swimmers in your country and you're just somehow have got a substance in your kitchen? You know, I know chefs. They don't contaminate their own kitchens. You know, you wouldn't think. I just have questions. Who's the chef and how did this happen? You know?
Crazy. Yeah, it's during COVID as well. So you'd think there are extra precautions about disinfecting and cleaning. But it's the thing about the report is there's nothing there which is just impossible. It's all sort of scientifically plausible just about. But you have to sort of suspend disbelief. There's a lot of very convenient things that happened. For example, they had CCTV in the kitchen and they saw, so that these tests happened in January. And because of a local COVID outbreak, they didn't actually analyze the samples and get the results till March. So the investigation which happened there, carried out by the Ministry for Public Security, didn't happen until at least March. And in those 2 months, they have CCTV footage supposedly showing that not much cleaning was done off the kitchen, hence the trimethoxazine, the TMZ, still being there. But then at the same time, they don't seem to have any way of seeing who was taking the TMZ and seeing if they could use the CCTV footage to prove that. So it's sort of almost too good to be true, some of the report.
So who was the first to make a determination that this was a contamination? Who came up with that idea first?
That's a really good question. So in March, the positives got announced. So they get put in the system of the World Anti-Doping Agency. So they and World Aquatics were notified. At that point, no one said contamination, but this investigation carried on, started after that by CINADA, the Chinese Anti-Doping Agency. And at some point along the line, April, May, they sort of started speculating. And I think I updated WADA saying that. But that theory wasn't confirmed until June. So the question we have is why the usual processes of establishing a doping violation, which means provisional suspensions and publicly disclosing the cases, why none of that happened earlier on in the process when they didn't know it was contamination?
Right. Yeah. It kind of makes sense, doesn't it? That would happen. So then the idea of contamination comes up months later. And how is it that, from what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong on any of this, but from what I understand, FINA or World Aquatics at that time accepted the decision somehow and didn't choose to further investigate. So why would they get to that conclusion?
Well, the argument, we haven't heard as much from World Aquatics. They just put out a statement saying they'd investigated diligently and professionally. Yeah. But WADA said in their press conference yesterday that basically by June, they felt they had no grounds to appeal. So when the report came out, if they'd appealed, they felt they would have lost. So there was no point appealing. There's two things. One is, why did they let it get that far? Why didn't they act in March when there was no contamination theory? Because I can talk about other similar cases which have basically come to the same conclusion, but been handled in a different way, whereas they were made public and went through the process of doping cases and provisional suspensions. But then the other thing is, could they have done more later? Could they have investigated on the ground? Could they have at least shown some skepticism about this report, which found trimethoxazine in the kitchen but didn't say how or why?
Does it seem to me that this is one of those situations where that they came up with an explanation that just fit the best in terms of the contamination in the kitchen? I don't know. Is like you said, has there been other cases of this where a situation like this has taken place and has been proven?
On the first point you said, the the forensic toxicologist we went to, who performed experiments for us in Germany, he used the phrase fairy tale. He said too good to be true. And I guess we would agree with that. In terms of the best other case, I think for comparable purposes, there was a case in 2008 in field hockey, mm-hmm. at an Olympic qualifying competition in Azerbaijan, when the Spanish team, one of the team tested positive for MDMA, so ecstasy. And the previous night, the whole team had had dinner in their hotel, and a lot of them had become very ill and basically shown the effects of consuming MDMA.
Mm.
And they tested some of the other athletes. A lot of them had complained at the time before the positive test about it, and they eventually conducted hair analysis, which is something you can do much later. And they conducted hair analysis not just on the players, but also on some of the other people there. For example, the president of the Spanish Hockey Federation and his wife, who were both in their 70s, and they'd also shown the effects of MDMA consumption. And they then used that to basically find a no-fault ruling against the lady who tested positive, and nothing happened. But the difference was, aside from doing hair analysis, which wasn't done in the Chinese case, the other difference was that the case was made public, and this all happened publicly. It nearly led to Spain losing their position in the Olympics. And then, yeah, there was a sort of public investigation, and yeah, the decision was basically made to have a no fault in the end. But yeah, so it was sort of similar, but handled differently.
Why do you think they came up with the explanation that it was found in a number of different areas? You know, the spices and the kitchen. You know, you tell me where it was found. Remind me again. But why would they come up with an explanation where it was kind of found in all these different areas?
Well, if you were being cynical, you would say that they needed it to be something which could have happened over multiple days, because it happened over 3 days. So if, say, it was just found in one soup bowl, it couldn't have happened three times. But
gotcha.
I mean, we don't know if it's true. I mean, what we would say is it is. So it was found. It's a bit confusing. It was found in the spice container, and that's how they feel it first got there. So it was found on the inside of the spice container, and also on the outside. They felt someone's hand, maybe it had been transferred somehow.
Mm.
So that's place one. And we don't know, it is so vague for reports. So we don't know how big this spice container was. You have to just imagine to some extent.
Yeah.
Place two was in the drainage of, they described it in the report as the sludge from out, I think the drainage out of the kitchen sink. So, yeah. And the third place was on the hood above the hob. And that we investigated and found that if you put trimetazidine in something like a soup and then take samples from the hood above, it can get there. Whether it can still be there 2.5 months later, we've got no idea, but it is possible for it to rise with the cooking process and be on the hood. So yeah, but we can't 100% say this isn't true. It is, everything in there is plausible. It's yeah, okay. If it is not true, it's brilliantly made up. But yeah. You obviously have to have skepticism.
Yeah. I've also said this publicly. There's no doubt in my mind that the athletes didn't know about this or knew about this, let's say. There's no doubt they didn't, right? They had no idea. I don't doubt that the coaches would have known anything. If there was some sort of, state-run, doping system or anything, I don't ever want to put the blame on the athletes. I totally believe they're innocent in this. Would you agree on that?
I mean, we don't know. We don't really know enough to say. But yeah, I mean, we're very conscious that the athlete, this isn't really a story about the athletes, and
right.
They shouldn't be made to, that if this did happen, they're almost victims as much as anyone else. So we didn't want to make the story about the athletes. But yeah, I mean, we simply don't know. And there's not, there's not really any evidence that they did speak to some of them, including some who didn't fail tests in a sort of internal questionnaire. And they asked them about things like what supplements they'd taken, where they'd been in the days before the competition. But we don't have any responses to the questions from the athletes of what they took and why. We contacted them via the Chinese Swimming Association before our story was published, and we didn't get a reply. We still haven't. So yeah, we don't know, basically.
When did the idea of the documentary come up, and how did that come about?
We weren't sure whether, when we first got the report, we obviously wanted to get to the bottom of it completely and find out exactly what had happened. But it's extremely difficult to investigate in China, as you can imagine. ARD does have a studio in Beijing, but it's very hard to do any independent journalism. So then we sort of thought, well, we haven't got enough to do a big documentary. We'll do a smaller sort of story. But then we realized that the whole story of how the sports bodies have reacted and not reacted and all the politics around it is pretty interesting. And then we ended up doing a sort of shared reporting with the New York Times as well. So, and they took a similar view to us about the sort of significance of it all.
I first saw this on an Australian publication. How did the Aussies get wind of this, and how did they break this?
Good question. We don't. I was woken up at 6 o'clock. We'd been editing. It was meant to be published on Sunday.
Okay.
On Saturday morning, I got woken up to be told that it appeared on the Australian. It was the Daily Telegraph, right? Or the Herald. Wow.
The Herald, I think. Yeah.
Herald, yeah. And we don't know what happened there, basically. But it meant we had a stressful Saturday of trying to finish the documentary at the same time as, the New York Times obviously published their story because of that. And we had to publish something, and it was quite fun.
But it's stressful. Adds to the conspiracy of the whole story.
Yeah, we simply don't know what happened. I wouldn't want to speculate, but yeah.
Yeah. We individualize training in the pool, so why not individualize your nutrition? Erica Biney of Biney Wellness Building will help you and your swimmers get exactly what each athlete needs through genetic testing and personalized nutrition plans. So stop guessing what you should and shouldn't be putting into your body. Athletes within a few weeks have noticed they're recovering faster because they're fueling their body with what they need and staying away from what their body hates. Erica understands swimming. She gets it. She's worked with over 20 Olympians, including the fastest man in the world, Caleb Dressel. Group discounts are available, so go to Biney Wellness Building and get in touch with Erica today. That's Biney, B-E-I-N-E, wellnessbuilding.net.
Tired of settling for less than the best with your team's dryland program? Swimstrong Dryland is the answer you've been looking for. With world-class dryland programming for every age group, customized to fit your team's needs, nutritional coaching and education centered on the latest evidence-based research, leadership training and character development to promote an athlete-driven culture, sports psychology education and mental skills training, coaches' corners to promote collaboration, data-driven performance analysis, and an unrivaled family of athletes, coaches, and teams, fast swimming starts here.
Yes. Where I saw a German version with some English subtitles. I guess that wasn't the intent. Is there an English version out there somewhere?
There's not. It's been put on YouTube with English subtitles, which is, right. It's only been published officially on ARD in German at the moment.
Okay. Okay. Is there an idea of something like a Netflix series coming out of this or anything like that?
not so far, but it's certainly an interesting story.
Yeah. Where are we now then? Tell us about today. Where are we at today? I mean, the story broke, Saturday morning, like you said. We're now it's Tuesday night for you, Tuesday afternoon for me here in America. So what's the last 3 days been like?
So the World Anti-Doping Agency put out a very aggressive statement threatening defamation. They had some different stuff in their statement to what they'd originally written to us. So we obviously contacted them, as did the New York Times, we did it 40. That was more than four. We gave them 48 hours to reply to all our questions, but the answers only came. The deadline was Friday night, so it was more than 48 hours. So then some of their answers on Saturday were different to what they told us. For example, that they couldn't investigate on the ground in China because of COVID, which was something they hadn't told us. And then, yeah, this sort of shouting match began with use of the US Anti-Doping Agency. And Travis Tygart, the head of the US Anti-Doping Agency, had spoken he made some pretty strong comments, which they reacted to. And then after our documentary came out on Sunday, they held an emergency press conference yesterday, or I guess, yesterday for me at least in Germany. Yep. I'm losing the time zones. And they, I think it was 1 hour, 45 minutes, they defended themselves with about the president, the science expert, the legal expert, the investigations expert. And there were, I would say, they didn't really clear up everything or a lot of things. There were still a lot of gaps. But they are claiming that it's interesting because they said this line that they couldn't investigate on the ground because of COVID. But then when pressed yesterday, they're now saying that if they had their time again, they wouldn't do anything differently at all and would handle it in exactly the same way. So they're planning not to appeal and trying to hope it goes away, I guess.
It seems that way, yeah. It seems like in a way it is going away. There doesn't seem to be a lot of athletes vocally talking about it. I saw Adam Peaty made a statement, which was powerful. It's great. You know, he's got concerns. Obviously, one of his competitors was named as one of the 23. Yeah. So he's certainly got concerns. And I think he's in a place in his career where he's willing to kind of stand up a little bit. So he's awesome. But I haven't seen much from coaches or for athletes. I did see an article in the Sydney Morning Herald where Dennis Cottrell, one of the Australian coaches who is coaching over in China, came out and made some statements. Did you see that one?
Yeah, he basically defended Chinese swimming and said, we don't have a doping culture. That was something that happened in the 1990s and it's changed now. And he defends them. I mean, I don't know him very well at all, so I can't really comment, but obviously he's someone who's been coaching in China. So,
look, I know him very well. He's a good man and he's an excellent coach. And I do hold him in the highest regard. I think he's been caught up in this. I don't know in terms of the statements he made, whether he was forced to say those things or not, they were just coming from him or, I don't know the situation over there at all, but, to say that there is absolutely no cheating going on, it's definitely an interesting statement with the fact that there's been 23, athletes that have come and tested positive here. So,
we don't know if there's any sort of big doping regime going on. We only have suspicion of that. And
there's been no evidence of other kind of, incidents where you can gather information and say, we've heard from other people that this is happening?
No, in a word. There have been other doping events in Chinese swimming over the years, in recent years, as you will know.
Right.
And we're obviously carrying on investigating. But in terms of concrete other examples, not at the moment, no.
Right. So in the sense of the athletes, there's no punishment for them and we're all going to move forward. Do you agree with that at least right now?
It's difficult. I think for me the problem was more in the past. So because when this investigation was going on in 2021, the athletes, every single one of them, competed at the Chinese Olympic trials, which happened right at the end of April, beginning of May 2021. So while this investigation was going on, so ordinarily they would have been provisionally suspended at that time. So they only qualified for the Olympics there. So it could have played out in that they got it played out in public, but they got cleared in time to compete at the Olympics anyway. So it's, it's there's been some talk about reallocating medals. That's way premature. It's not.
There's no fact of that.
No fact of that. WADA and World Aquatics have said that won't happen.
Yeah.
I think it was sort of someone trying to muddy the water a bit. But I mean, now I think it's obviously got to hang over the Paris Olympics to some extent. We had, I mean, I wasn't in Tokyo, but I was in the Rio Olympics when I remember the Russian breaststroke swimmer, I forgot her first name,
Efimova.
Yeah, well, when she was competing, everyone was booing and it was all a bit unpleasant. And I think the problem is when you have a case like this, it's understandable that athletes from other countries are going to feel it was unfair and there's going to be some resentment and it's going to spill over into the competition to at least some extent. But I mean, I feel there's a lot of unanswered questions in this, and we're, as I said, going to keep investigating, but it's not really, it shouldn't always be journalists doing these things. It should be sports bodies. And the sad thing is that they're now doubling down and saying there wasn't anything to investigate. WADA supposedly have a massively improved investigations department, but they didn't seem to have any interest at all in doing anything here. And yeah, they seem more interested in threatening people. And yeah, it's not, I don't think it paints a great picture of world sport and the global anti-doping system.
Where could the pressure come for them to make a decision or someone to reinvestigate or open up an investigation? Where could that come from?
Well, I think there is going to be pressure within WADA. So the government representatives, we're going back to the whole 50% sport, 50% government, the government side have already, some figures have already called for more investigation and criticised what happened. The sports minister here in Germany put out quite a strong statement saying they should have done better then and should do better now and try and get to the bottom of it. And I think quite a few swimming governing bodies have put out quite strong statements asking for investigations. I know we've been contacted by so many people within, like scientists and other people within anti-doping, people who from national anti-doping organizations that are in charge of sanctioning cases, who don't understand why this case was handled differently from how they would handle their cases. So yeah, I think there's definitely going to be some consequences. We'll see how many, but as you say, it would be interesting if more athletes came out. There have been one or two, but as you say, not that many.
Well, athletes and coaches, you know, come on, coaches, where are you? Like, I've got an opinion on this, and it's not like I'm, you know, it just seems wrong. Well, you know what seems wrong is that it's come to light this far out. Well, why do you honestly think that WADA and World Aquatics thought this was never going to come to light? Do you think that?
I don't know. I'm not sure. It makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, what's also weird is, well, it's not weird, but it's wrong, is that usually when a case like this happens, like the Spanish hockey case I spoke about, and there's been a lot with contaminated meat, it should be, even if you don't mention the names of the athletes or even the country, they should publicize the case so you can learn from it, so there can be scientific research, so athletes can be warned about the danger of trimetazidine 2.5 months in a kitchen. But none of that happened. Nobody knows anything. Yeah, and that seems completely abnormal and unacceptable.
It just seems like they've done more harm than good by holding on to this story for this long. Now, look, it doesn't matter if they took it or not. Like you said, that these poor athletes get up on the podium at the Paris Olympics, they're going to be booed. They're going to be, you know, there's going to be doubt. There's going to be questions. No one will truly believe them. And that's sad for that situation. It's sad for swimming. It's sad for the competition.
We obviously discussed about naming the athletes, but we felt that would almost be worse not to name them, because if we said swimmers, everyone would start speculating as to who exactly it was. So we felt that we had to name them, but it's not, as you said, it's not really they're not the villains in this, so to speak. We don't know what happened, and it's unfair on them as much as it is on anyone else.
Were there some unnamed heroes in this, some whistleblowers who will have to go into hiding from this?
I can't. I don't want to talk about that at all. Yeah. Yeah. Just not.
No, fair enough. I gotcha. Okay, listen, why did you decide to talk to me, by the way? I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, we want people to take an interest in this story, and I think it's an important story. It's an important story in swimming, but also just generally about fairness and consistency in sports. And I was pleased to be invited.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. Well, I appreciate you doing this and filling us in. Look, I don't think we've solved all the questions we have, and I think they're going to be ongoing. You know, like I said, I think it's a shame that this is 3 months out from Paris, and this is what we're going to be talking about between now and even at the games. It's just sad for us because we want to celebrate swimming. I'm a swim junkie, swim nerd, you know, so it's like I love performance. But yeah, this is real, and this attacks the heart of what we believe in, you know? So, it's kind of sad. Yeah. But, listen, Nick, I appreciate you chatting today. Is there anything I've missed at all? Anything you want to finish with?
I don't think so. I think we've covered most of it. It's funny because I'm not a science expert. I'm not a legal expert, but you have to get into really the depths of all of it to understand this. And I think particularly with the rules of anti-doping, there's so many loopholes, and you have to have a provisional suspension except in the times you don't, and it's almost like the rules are allowing sort of wriggle room and flexibility. So I think it's a really interesting story which raises a lot of questions.
What's next though? I guess this doesn't end right now. Is there something on the horizon for you, working on something else right now?
Well, I'm hoping to, we've been working pretty hard for the last few weeks. I'm hoping to have some time off, but not yet. We're still doing various things and, follow up and investigating certain parts, but we don't know exactly what our next story is yet, but.
Let me ask you one final question. Do you honestly believe that the athletes themselves in any way will have some punishment or repercussions for this? Or do you think, like, I'm thinking for the athletes who are competing now and knowing that some of their competitors tested positive and hoping maybe that there might be some suspension. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's all, you know, these athletes just move on. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think the way it's happened, like when the Russian doping scandal came out, the World Anti-Doping Agency got a lot of criticism then for not having done more earlier. But once the stories came out, then they were pretty strong, and they, despite a lot of opposition in Russia and from the International Olympic Committee, but it did at least take some quite firm steps to at least go some way towards punishing Russia. But in this case, their reputation is so at stake that they're almost doubling down and not prepared to consider that anything went wrong, because if they did, it would be an admission that they'd got it wrong. So, it's not over yet. There's got to be more pressure. There's a meeting of the White House, I think, later this week involving some of the government representatives. And I think, I'm certain this will get raised, and I think the pressure will continue from various quarters, and it'll be interesting if new information comes to light as well.
Yeah. Well, listen, Nick, I appreciate your time again. You know, you're a brave man, and good luck with everything. All right.
Thanks a lot, Brett. Thanks for, right. Thanks. Very interesting.
Cheers, mate. Bye.